The 15th Amendment seems to be well-settled law of the land in this country, but in February, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the case that challenges parts of the Voter Rights Act of 1965, which has been believed by many to be important to ensuring the right of every citizen to vote. In this week's Legal Issues in the News segment, Christine Hurt gives us both sides of this issue.
Last week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments regarding the constitutionality of a federal statute that is almost 50 years old. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 was enacted to ensure that members of minority groups, particularly African Americans living in the Jim Crow South, were not deprived of the right to vote by various local regulations, including poll taxes and literacy tests. Section 2 of the Act makes discrimination in voting illegal, and Section 5 creates a preclearance mechanism for any changes in election practices or processes for certain states with a history of election discrimination. Section 5 is a temporary provision that has been amended and extended four times, most recently in 2006 by an almost unanimous Congress. Last week's case, Shelby County v. Holder, argues that Section 5 is unconstitutional. Section 5's preclearance mechanisms are time-consuming and expensive and only apply to covered jurisdictions. On the one hand, the case against Section 5 seems fairly compelling. The formula that's used to determine which jurisdictions are covered uses data from the 1972 presidential election, thus punishing a handful of states for sins of the past. Though no one is arguing that racism has disappeared, not many suggest that the 2012 elections look the same as the 1972 elections, even in the South. Relatedly, Section 5 opponents argue that some covered jurisdictions look great compared to Midwestern battleground states that have had election controversies lately, such as Pennsylvania and Indiana. Supporters argue that discriminatory shenanigans still continue in those covered jurisdictions, such as election officials attempting to move a polling place in Alaska 70 miles so that it was only accessible by boat or plane. In addition, Section 5 contains within it a bailout provision that allows counties, cities, and townships, and even entire states, to be uncovered on the basis of a clean record for 10 years. Several jurisdictions, including three-quarters of the counties in Virginia, have availed themselves of this bailout mechanism. Under a parallel mechanism, three states and some cities and counties in other states have been bailed in. The ironic twist in any discussions about Section 5 is that those who want it struck down argue that it's not necessary anymore. But if that's true, it's because elections are held properly because of the existence of Section 5. Also, those who argue that Section 5 is bad because it only applies to certain jurisdictions don't seem to argue that Section 5 should be extended to all states. Finally, the arguments in the Shelby County case seem to be about a broader issue than voting districts. At February's oral argument, Justice Antonin Scalia referred to the Voting Rights Act as a racial entitlement. In fact, some Section 5 opponents argue that the preclearance mechanism has been used to create and maintain districts controlled by minority groups. Therefore, this case may be seen as similar to Fisher v. Texas, a case heard earlier this term on whether racial preferences in college admissions are unconstitutionally discriminatory against non-minority groups. In both cases, various groups may see these efforts to reverse past discrimination as discriminatory themselves, given several decades of enforcement of anti-discrimination laws. Of course, others see affirmative action programs and Section 5 as still vitally necessary today. This is Christine Hurt.
For many of the less math-inclined among us, tax software has been a godsend, and it's becoming more sophisticated every year. Earlier today, NPR's Renee Montaigne spoke with Toby Stanger, senior editor of Consumer Reports, about the latest software and mobile apps designed to help us file our yearly taxes.
With many people preparing taxes on their own now, because of course they have all these tools, where does one go, though, to start? Where do you go to even find out what's out there?
Well, if you expect to have adjusted gross income of $57,000 or less, the easiest thing to do is to go to the IRS website. And they have a free section called Free File, and you can prepare and file your federal income taxes for free with one of 15 companies that has signed up with Free File. So you go to IRS, you click on Free File. If you think you're going to be have an adjusted gross income that's greater than that, you can use a search engine and just type in tax preparation, and a number of names should come up. One that everybody might know is TurboTax. H&R Block has its own online version, and TaxAct is a good one because everybody can file their federal return for free.
Give us some examples of the best and most helpful online tools.
Some of the tools that are quite interesting are charitable deduction trackers. There's something called It's Deductible. It's with TurboTax, but you can also use it online even if you don't use TurboTax. If you have receipts throughout the year, there's something called Shoebox. You actually send them your receipts, and they scan the documents for you and upload it so that you can then download it into your tax software or use it however you want.
In the last couple of years, we've been hearing about a rise in identity theft related to online filing, such as using someone's name and Social Security to steal their refund check. What about these tax prep sites? Do they make one more vulnerable to identity theft?
Well, they say they use bank-level security encryption. If you're comfortable with online banking, you can be comfortable filing your taxes online. If you find that you have trouble getting your refund because the IRS tells you that somebody else took it, you should definitely contact the IRS right away. If it were earlier in the season, I would say that filing early can help because what identity thieves are doing is they're taking advantage of people who haven't yet filed. So for next year, file early so that you wouldn't be vulnerable in that way.
So what do you use?
I use TurboTax, and I do itemize my deductions. I use Mint, which is an online product that is free, and I can sort out my charitable deductions that way. There are other online products that do the same thing.
What other tips do you have for those who are willing to do it themselves and go online that'll make it easier for them to file?
Well, if you have mobile phone technology, there are apps to file a 1040EZ, which is the simple, very simple form, through TurboTax or H&R Block at home. You can photograph your W-2 from your smartphone, and it will import your information directly into your 1040EZ. And it goes right up into your return, and then you can file it directly from your smartphone, or you can go online and do it.
In the end, how would you judge these new online technologies? Are they, in fact, making it easier for individuals to prepare and file their tax returns?
Well, Consumer Reports hasn't tested all of these, but just from my looking at them in general, there's a lot that's out there to make tax preparation easier, more efficient, less scary. And people should take advantage of it and not be afraid to try doing it yourself because you could save yourself $200, $600. It's worth trying. And you can try it for free. So what the heck?
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Toby Stenger is a personal finance editor for Consumer Reports.
That interview was conducted this morning by Renee Montaigne of NPR.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, 3 blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House rooms are large, carpeted, and air-conditioned with semi-private baths. Meals are served in its Gold LEED certified dining area. More information is available at hendrickhouse.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 4th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of Alan Sillitoe, born in Nottingham, England, 1928. Wrote about his hometown in his novel Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. It was on this day in 1952, Ernest Hemingway wrote a letter to his publisher saying he had just finished his new book, The Old Man and the Sea. And it's the birthday of Khaled Hosseini, born in Kabul in 1965, author of the runaway bestseller, The Kite Runner, sold more than 12 million copies around the world, came out in 2003. He was the son of a diplomat, an affluent family that immigrated to this country around the time of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. They landed in San Jose when Khaled was 12. They had nearly nothing. They had to go on welfare. His father, the diplomat, found work as a driving instructor in San Jose, and Khaled Hosseini set out to make a career that would earned some income. He went off to medical school, made it through his residency. He was an internist, and then he began to think about writing, which he had always meant to do. He got up at 5 every morning so he could write for 2 hours before he went to the hospital. He wrote about his memories of Afghanistan, an autobiographical story about a friendship between an 8-year-old boy, the son of a diplomat, and one of the family servants, an illiterate man from an ethnic minority group. The boy teaches the servant to read and write, and the servant teaches the child to fly kites. The book came out, and it was so phenomenally successful that Khaled Hosseini had a hard time writing his second one. But it came out in mid-2007, 1,000 Splendid Sons, a story narrated by two Afghani women, Miriam and Layla. A very different book with a lot of main characters and multi-generational, told from alternating points of view. It was the best-selling book in Britain in 2008. Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dobbins entitled Waking. Waking, I look at you sleeping beside me. It is early, and the baby in her crib has begun her conversation with the gods that direct her, cooing and making small hoots. Watching you, I see how your face bears the signs of our time together. For each objective description, there is the romantic. For each scientific fact, there's the subjective truth. This line was caused by days at a microscope. This, from when you thought I no longer loved you. Last night a friend called to say that he intends to move out. So simple, he and his wife splitting like a cell into two separate creatures. What would happen if we divided ourselves? As two colors blend on a white pad, so we have become a third color. Or better, as a wire bites into the tree it surrounds, so we have grown together. Can you believe how frightening I find this, to know I have no life except with you? It's almost enough to make me destroy it, just to protest it. Always we seemed perched on the brink of chaos, but today there's just sunlight and the baby's chatter, her wonder at the way light dances on the wall. How lucky to be ignorant, to greet joy without a trace of suspicion, to take that first step without worrying what comes trailing after, as night trails after day, as winter, summer, or confusion, where all seemed clear, and each moment was its own reward.